So if I'm really angry, if I sound angry, it will be able to adjust its voice to be maybe more accommodating. Whereas if I'm excited, it can be excited with me.
Yes, that's already happening.
Hello, I'm Kylie Whitehead. Welcome to the Poly AI podcast. I'm joined today by Poly AI's head of machine learning, Pavel Budzianowski. Hi, Pavel.
Hey, Kylie. How's it going?
Yeah, good. How are you?
But excited about our new topic, which we talked about a little bit before, the other end of it, which is voice generation.
Yeah, exactly. So in episode 6, a few episodes ago, Pavel and I spoke about speech recognition. And like Pavel just said, we're back here today to talk a little bit about voice generation. And Pavel, just to set the context here, we've all seen films like Spike Jonze's Her, right, where the AI has this incredibly realistic voice to the point where Joaquin Phoenix falls in love with it. But then I speak to Siri or I speak to Alexa and it still just sounds like a robot, right? I'm not going to fall in love with Siri or Alexa. They're pretty boring. Sorry. And there are thousands of people working on those voice assistants, right? And I really want to use today to get to the bottom of why they still sound like that and what we're going to do to make them better. So maybe to kick us off, you could talk about the really early history of voice generation, because I think it goes pretty far back, right?
Yep. Just as with automatic speech recognition, machine translation, again, historically speaking, all started in deep 1950s. A lot of army projects, a lot of DARPA-style-like projects was about imitating human beings. And part of that was ability to create human-like speech. You can trace back early experiments, even earlier to like 18th century, 19th century, where people physically were generating some sounds. Just like human, just like normal instruments, right? They were trying to mimic human voices. But as again with in translation or automatic speech recognition, IBM led their way in early 50s, where it was creating first so-called vocoders, which actually still exist and still part of all of these really nasty stuff that you hear sometimes in Siri or Alexa. But not long, we're going to get to that problem soon. So 50s is definitely like the early stage of these systems. Then 60s, 70s, folks were working on improving that to the point that I think it's worth mentioning here, which is the Space Odyssey, right, 2001, where that was highlighted quite visibly.
Yeah, so apparently Arthur C. Clarke, when he was writing 2001, he visited Bell Labs and he saw a demonstration of their vocoder and it was singing the song Daisy Bell, which is how 2001 ends. So he was so impressed and wrote that in, which I think is really, really interesting. You mentioned vocoder then, right? And so vocoder goes a really long way back. I remember a few months ago, you wrote me a really great blog post about scaling the universal vocoder.
Yep.
And like, what has changed? Are you telling me that you're using the same technology now that they were using in the 50s?
Yeah. The early experiments and the early models that are almost can be traced to late 2000s. Essentially, everything there evolved around the vocoder, the early idea of the vocoder, where you had the units of speech, just like with automatic speech recognition, we call them phonemes, that are our heuristics to simplify the problem of human voice, where you have parts of the speech that we need to utter. And the whole job of vocoder was to concatenate these parts of the speech, these phonemes, and make the sounds as similar as possible to the human beings. Now, once you define the tool like that, immediately you're going to run into the problems, because you concatenating all of the words, all of the sentences in like small units, and you're just trying them, concatenate them together. Now, by definition, this will not sound natural. And you would have a 4 years of a lot of work, a lot of PhDs, a lot of papers, a lot of even companies trying to make this sound a little bit better, to the point that you had these early Google speech synthesis or Siri or Alexa that got us to the point that it was intelligible. You clearly understood when Siri was telling you about the address or direction, but definitely wasn't pleasing, right? So this early stage vocoders was essentially getting the phonemes, concatenating together and creating the audio out of it. Then, as always, neural networks come in and they flip the table, right? As you can observe in automatic speech recognition around 2010, 2012, with speech synthesis, it was a little bit better later around 2015. You start to see early traces of people start applying deep learning to text-to-speech synthesis, as previously called the whole field. Now it's moving into the voice generation nomenclature, where we are giving the neural network freedom to generate the whole word or even the whole sentence at once, right? And by definition, that will introduce a great leap in terms of the quality. So when I wrote about the vocoder in 2023, it's slightly different vocoder than it was 1970 in 2001 Space Odyssey. There's so many numbers, I'm getting lost into it. But what's the most important bit, that since last couple of years, we stopped chunking the speech and we start generating the full sentence in once.
Right, that makes sense. But I still feel like in a lot of applications, because of the way the speech is being concatenated, it still doesn't sound like you would say a sentence, right? So I would say like Friday the 13th. But when you hear these systems, they say Friday the 13th. Why does it still sound like that?
Got you. Part of the issue is that a lot of systems still exist and work on old systems that not really using the deep learning even in 2023. So that could be one of the issues when you hear it on the bus or in the underground. I can assure you that probably the code goes back into times where we weren't even born. So that will be swept away, I'm telling you, in a couple of months, because that's how easy it will be to implement these systems. The other problem, if the system already works on the deep learning architectures, are coming from the lack of context. And here we go back to the everything that PolyAI stands for, which is, it's really hard if you were asked actually to mimic somebody's voice and out of the blue you're required to say specific sentence, which is announce that the bus is coming at 1 o'clock and you're sorry for delays, right? Without knowing what country you're in, how long already the bus was delayed, right? All sorts of the questions that are part of the context, you would be just doing a guessing game how you should utter the sentence. And that's what the models are doing these days. They do not have that context. So they average out all possible things, all possible ways to say that particular sentence, and just making the best guess.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So obviously at PolyAI currently, like as of this moment, we're using a combination, right, of synthesized voices and voice actors, where we are doing a bit of concatenation to put those together. But when we first started working with voice actors, I remember that they would record, they would see the script of what we wanted them to record, and they would say it in that IVR voice. They'd be like, thank you for calling, company name. How can I help? And it's taken a lot, even just to train people, that isn't like the most natural way to sound. Yeah. It seems very neutral. It's like we almost learned from machines how professionals should talk, and now we're trying to undo that and make it people-led again, right? Really natural.
Yeah. So there's a lot of issues that are not visible to people who are not practicing the deep learning field. And one of them is very trivial. Something that is obvious when you're thinking about large language models or ASR is the amount of data. So text-to-speech voice generation historically has been deprived of that data. First of all, people tend to be pretty close also mentally when it comes to like proprietary of their voice, right? That's a part of your identity. So most of folks, and I'm including myself, would be pretty reluctant, right? If you would tell them that, give me your voice for a couple of dollars and you're going to copy that and you're going to be heard all over the world, right? That's something that is not as easy as telling you that record your speech and we are trying to understand you, right? That's whole different spectrum. So because of these reasons, while the models in 2022, automatic speech recognition models, were trained on 100,000 of hours, the state-of-the-art models, either in production or in research, in voice generation were trained on 500 hours at best. So you see the huge difference, right? And as we know, and probably kids are being taught this in kindergarten these days, right? Neural networks need more data, right? So only last couple of months, and I can see it if you like open up our research forums and boards, you can start to see the models that were able to train from vast majority of the internet data to mimic conversational way of human talking to each other, like podcasts or YouTube videos. And historically, it was really hard for us to train with that noisy data, the models that were asked to generate the voice that is not noisy, right? So you have this issue where I'm giving you as an input very noisy conversational data like podcasts or data like we are having right now. And then you're asked to generate something very clean, right? That's by definition creates confusions. And for a lot of years, we had just failed with training with this data. And that left us with some voice recording of actors, as I told you, 500 hours of data that were our typical benchmarks. And you see the wave of new research coming in last couple of months, like I would say a year, highlighting with Vali for Microsoft. I think that was one of the models that really hit the news, where you could basically clone your voice with 5 seconds of your right input data that really blew people away. But what was the most important part about that model wasn't any new architecture. It was just classic architecture that we use with large language models. But they train on 60,000 hours of data as a base model. So you see the jump. You see the jump in terms of amount of data that they had, and hence the quality. Yep.
You were speaking earlier about context as well, which I think you speak very differently. I'm thinking of an example of one of our deployments where it's for a restaurant group. And it answers the phone like you'd expect a person to answer the phone, hello. And how do you get that context into voice data? Like it's so, the context of being able to understand is one thing, but then adding on that other layer of emotional cues, how you change the way the voice is inflected and what that actually sounds like. Feels quite difficult to define.
I appreciate that you're asking the questions that I was waiting since the beginning of that podcast, because that's one of the most exciting parts of my day-to-day work, which is essentially contextualizing text-to-speech and voice generation. What you will observe, and you can get some hints from the demos that you see online, or even live products from some companies, is that the wave of conversational voice generation is coming. And the way we're going to do it is basically adapting the architectures that we have for a single speaker, where you were given a text, right, to say, and some context of this speaker voice. And we will transform it in a conversational setup, where the training data, to put it naively, will be two blocks. One is person one, and the second block will be person B. And essentially, the model will see the turn before your answer, right? So you can see straight away that in terms of the text generation, in the example that you were given, if I'm going to call a restaurant and I'll say, hi, how's going on? I'm Pavel. I'm looking for a table for tonight, right? This will be all inputs to the model, along with all of the data that the model had about the voice that it needs to generate. So this combined will give you the full information that you need in order to say, hello, Pavel, how are you? How can I help you? Unfortunately, we don't have any tables tonight, right? Which is completely different setup that we have right now, which is just a text. Unfortunately, we don't have a table tonight. That will be said in a flat average voice. And as I was stitching puzzles together, if you think about what's happening right now and which we'll observe soon in the production and that we are working as well in Poly AI, is that we start to have conversational data. People love podcasts. We are a good example of that. So there is more and more data out there where two people converse, or even more. We learn how to train models from that noisy environment. We have architectures, which are deep neural networks, that are so-called transformer. When you put these things together, right, magic will happen. You can already see some demos out there. I'm not going to name some of the big companies doing that, where you start seeing this early traces of just mind-blowing conversational examples. And you soon going to be probably living in a reality where you might call your mom and she might be busy cooking, and there will be like AI assistant answering all of your questions. Hopefully that's not going to be the case. I'm expecting my mom to do that.
Yeah, that's so creepy. It's surely when you have that huge pot of data, like if you combine my voice with your voice, you're going to get a really weird voice.
Censure.
So what happens when you have that like really big data set? How does it average out? Because it's so personal, right? Voice is so, it's so much more personal than text or anything else.
Got it. So from the modeling perspective, the models that we are training, they always have this part that are called speaker embeddings. And as an input to the model, except for the text or the context of the conversation, you're also giving a sample of your speech. And this will be transformed into so-called vector embedding. So this vector of numbers that will specify that I want to generate voice with that specific qualities. And because throughout the training, the model observed, I don't know, 100,000 speakers, they will learn that given these speaker embedding, thinking about female voice, age from 20 to 30, having a, let's say, British or Welsh accent, let's be diplomatic here. And this signal would be way different than a male 20 to 40, right, having some non-native accent. And given this embedding, the model will learn and know how to generate the right quality voice.
And then in terms of responding emotionally, you did talk about this a bit earlier, but you mentioned that it would be looking at the previous turn in the conversation. So if I'm really angry, if I sound angry, it will be able to adjust its voice to be maybe more accommodating. Whereas if I'm excited, it can be excited with me.
Yes, that's already happening. Yeah. You have models that given the sample of your voice that is happy, it will copy that happiness. Now, that's a little bit different than what we really want, which is contextually smart, right? So if my interlocutor is happy, then I should be happy as well, right? Rather than just artificially like putting some happy input and getting happy output, because you can imagine really bad experience in terms of, I don't know, poly AI deployments where somebody said something really sad, but we put some happy sample, right? Then you have this confusion. And then the person on the phone will be like, what the hell, right? So we're not there yet, but it's clear that it's coming, that the true contextuality will happen. And I would say it's just a matter of a couple months.
Yeah, that's really exciting. I think it opens a lot of doors. When you think about the context of mirroring in psychology, where perhaps the voice assistant can adapt to the speaker's tone, and that is something that's meant to put the other person in the conversation at ease, right?
Yes.
Which will be very interesting to see how that's applied in like sales situations and other situations where maybe it's a little bit ethically blurry, but should be interesting to watch.
100%. I think it would be worth of us adding later on under the website of our podcast, maybe some samples that we're already having in live productions, right? With this generative voices that are already mind blowing. And I'm really excited what's going to happen. You know, when we're going to increase our neural networks, add more data, add more context, it's just going to get better, which means better UX for the customers.
Yeah. I think we've both been at PolyAI for like 5 years now, right? And it really feels to me that the last year, so much more has changed than had changed in those 4 years before that, right?
Yeah.
Like we didn't have a choice but to use voice actors because synthesized voices just were not good. And then all of a sudden, wow, synthesized voices are pretty good now.
Yep.
Is that all because of generative?
Yes. Yeah. It's the wave of generative AI. That's a simple answer, but also the true answer. It was just like this tipping point of increasing our knowledge, how neural networks work, how data is important. And as I told you, right, we had a lot of fights as a research community with this noisy data that we've overcome with better architectures that allows us to like make this leap that you can hear and experience when you call our production systems.
Yeah, cool. And it's not just the voice itself, right? Like we've spoken about the way that the voice sounds and voice generation, but also the actual words that are being generated allows you to add that extra layer of conversationalness to the conversation, right? Because at the moment, using the intent-based models, you're pulling a pre-written utterance back.
Yeah.
And you have to just keep repeating it, but a generative model can make things up on the fly in the way that a person would.
Absolutely. So as you see, like this whole technology stacks adds things up together into a really nice puzzle. So starting from automatic speech recognition, better and better understanding the contextuality of the answers with large language models, where, as you said, it's not about retrieving the best answer, but really generating every word as close and as specific that you need to be given the question of the user. And then given that highly adapted answer to specific problem, you're going to generate highly contextual speech that will truly make the whole UX much better. Because let's be honest, no matter how smart my ASR system will be, no matter how big and smart my large language model will be, a lot of times I got to say in the last couple of years, like most of people were saying that the system is dumb or smart, depending on the voice quality. It's a huge factor. It's, I would say, by far the biggest in terms of the how people receive and feel when they're talking to the system. So that all finally comes together and I'm super excited where things going to go. Even like going a couple years ahead, excuse me for the research anecdotes, but you can already see some people trying, and we are actively discussing this in our community, of building models that will be truly speech-to-speech. Facebook, for example, created literally a couple weeks ago, both data set and first models that I got to say suck, but I'm sure they will be good at some point. Where essentially we're going to transform from you talking to me and the system will be outputting in one go a speech rather than dividing into like not simple, but specific models. And that will be like another step into improving the speed and quality overall. But that's the story of the future. But you see how the whole field is just moving on fast forward speed.
Is speech to speech then going to kill like voice biometrics?
I would say so.
Yeah, I can just generate your voice.
Yeah. That's one thing. The other thing is that we might kill large language models, if you think about it, right? Because like, why do we care about text in some applications if we care about speech? Like imagine like you're driving, right? You should never be looking at the text or like trying to
write
some text. It should always be like just speech-to-speech interactions. It's really hard to foresee what's going to happen in the future given the speed ups. But I can tell you one thing, the quality of it, it's improving so much that I would say by the end of 2024, you're going to have a really hard time telling whether you're talking to a human being or not.
Yeah, I think that's going to open up a lot of very interesting questions that I'm sure we'll keep covering on the podcast. So I think we'll wrap it up there. You can listen to previous episodes of the podcast on our YouTube channel or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can find us on LinkedIn for all of our latest news and updates. So once again, Pavel, thank you so much for joining me today, taking the time to explain. It's a very complicated, but very interesting technology. And until next time, goodbye.